This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated on it, either by its hosts or any guests, is to be construed as psychological, medical, or legal advice. Thanks for listening. Hi, this is Mike Tripiano, and this is Secret Sun, the podcast about searching identity and secrecy. Hey, everybody. It's Mike. How are you? Or as they say in Oz, how you going? I like that one. That's incentive enough for me to visit and kangaroos. Okay, let's get some business out of the way. If you like the show, please give it a star rating. A 4 or 5 would be amazing. Get a review, go on over to Patreon, make a donation. Can be either monthly or just a one-timer. Small is okay by me. Defray the expenses of producing Secret Sun. And there are some. If you like the show, please tell a friend. Preferably one with deep pockets. Joking. Just joking. Tell a friend. Okay, one more thing. I'm starting to again teach my storytelling classes. And you will see a link to that on secretsunpod.com. Hey, why not join us? You will improve as a teller of tales, and you'll have a lot of fun. Okay, so 2 weeks ago, there was no episode. There was a family emergency. I had to rush down to my mother-in-law's, 8 hours by train with the situation there. In America, 8 hours by train might mean, I don't know, 50 miles. But here, it's a different story. It's a pretty good distance. So we resolved it. Seems to be going well. I was there about 8 days with my 91-year-old mother-in-law. I like her. Don't get me wrong. She's nice. She's physically fit. Mentally starting to go a little bit. My wife works very hard to keep her mother alive. Scheduling doctor appointments, physical therapy, hair salon visits. My mother-in-law has more hair than I do. My wife cheers her on. She says, "Mom, you got to get out of bed today." Stuff like that. I look at all this effort, and on a deep level, I really don't get it. I want to, but it's all theoretical to me. This idea of wanting to keep a mother alive. I wish it were different. I really wish it were different. I had no emotional attachment to my so-called birth mother, who I call my real mother. Why? Because I did not know her. I did not grow up with her. My adopted mother? Forget it. I got out of there as quickly as possible. No love lost. I got away from family in general. I thought I was done with it. I went to New York. I surrounded myself with people who were done with family. Now, years later, I'm surrounded by family. Family, family, family. Everywhere I look, family. As far as the eye can see, this thing that's never had any value to me. That doesn't mean I did not want it to have value, but it didn't. I got no sustenance from it. That's the weird thing for me about being adopted. All the things we were told are the bedrocks of civilization. They hold no meaning for me, except on a vague theoretical level. I mean, I get it, but I don't feel it. Motherhood, family, organized religion. Part of me just says, where was it all when I needed it? And what did it ever do for me? And why someone would care at all about their mother was utterly beyond me. I mean, you told me mothers are interchangeable. So why is any one mother more important than another? I just didn't get it. And on some level, I still don't. People come and go. People die. They disappear. That's what I was taught from the earliest age. And I learned that lesson well. Yet here I am in a village being a one-on-one caretaker for a week for a helpless 91-year-old mother-in-law, my wife's mother, trying to keep her alive, cooking for her, playing dominoes, watching soap operas, talking about the old times. I sit here looking at her, wondering, what is it like to really care if your own mother were to die? What is that like? My guest today, I know, like a lot of people from social media. I met him on Twitter. We've been in contact a few years. First time ever talking to him was this interview. I liked his cranky posts, his irritable demeanor online. But when you talk to him one-on-one, he laughs a lot. Maybe like myself. Dave also had a mother. And like a lot of us, he never knew her. Here's Dave.
What time is it where you are?
It is 5:04.
This is commitment. This is... It's now required, but it's encouraged.
Well, I'm a happy subscriber.
That's very nice of you. You're in San Francisco?
Halfway between San Jose and San Francisco.
And you grew up there. The reason I ask, I just watched Zodiac again, one of my favorite films.
No, I grew up in San Diego. Shortly after I turned 18, I moved to San Francisco. So I was in the city when he was, I think this was, I want to say 78, but maybe 77. You know, I followed it closely. The city was very weird at that time. It was the end of the hippie era. Oh, who was that guy? Oh, Jim Jones. Jim Jones, the People's Temple on Fillmore. I actually lived there because, one, I wanted to go to college there, and two, I had read Armistead Maupin's Tales of the City. It was everything that San Diego wasn't.
Yes, I can understand that. And why there? Why not New York or something?
Just because I felt like it would be a free environment to live in and wouldn't have my life scrutinized by my parents or friends or family.
When you first moved to San Francisco, were you out already? Or were you just thinking, I'm going to go there and figure things out?
Semi-out. Not really out. I mean, nobody was really out at different times. So this is like 77, 78, when it's people in San Francisco are out, but in San Diego, it just was not possible to come out and say that. Living with a man or getting married to a man was so far out of my, it was just so far out there. And I, you know, I just didn't know what I was going to do. I felt like I was in quicksand. I call my move to San Francisco breaking the window of a burning building in order to escape. I felt like if I stayed there, I would have sunk to the bottom of the ocean. Even though I was scared and fired of moving to this town, I'm like, I'm only 19. And my parents were completely baffled about why I would do something like that. Why are you rejecting our family? Which is, ironically, I was rejected from my first family. I never felt I fit in with my family, that I was the oddball, that I was the black sheep. Well, I always felt like they rejected me. I mean, I felt like I was rejected twice.
Yeah, I'm getting used to talking about adoption. I could not do it growing up, though, because it was just too uncomfortable for my adopted parents. Could you talk about it?
I just didn't have the awareness. I fully believed that I was the one that was fucked up, that I was the one that was crazy, and I was the one that was a bad kid. Not until I took a DNA test did I start to think about the separation from my mother, and two, I want to know if I was like my biological father and biological mother in temperament, traits, looks, genetic, mirroring. I struggled with mental health issues as a kid and pretty much throughout life until the last 6 years. And I felt I was in no shape to actually go looking for the truth. I had so much shame about not being more accomplished in life that I was afraid that I would show up at their doorstep and they would say, oh, is this all you've done? I don't even know why you bothered to look us up. You're like nothing.
It's amazing you had that idea. It never occurred to me when I was searching. I just was like, I at least have to see her. That's kind of why I showed up on her doorstep. I thought, well, I'm at least going to see her. The next move is hers. But you never went to your parents when you were young and said, hey, I'm thinking about searching.
So they gave me some information that actually was true. They said that she was a nurse, that she was 31. She wasn't married. My father was in law school. He wouldn't marry her. What they said was there are many ways to have a family, and adoption is one of the ways to have a family. And then they said, well, your mother gave you up. And I'm like, well, I thought it was a mistake. I thought maybe she misplaced me or, I don't know, lost me at the hospital. But I did say, we need to go look for her. This has got to be a mistake. And it was shocking because I had already bonded with my parents. I felt like, so you're going to tell me that I have another mother and I can't know who she was supposed to love you. You know, my mother was very threatened, very insecure about being a mother. And for me to say, well, we should go look for her, that was such an affront. My mother lost it. She started yelling at me. How dare I question her motherhood? I think she looked at it as her right to have another woman's child. I was not happy. I often use that when I would have fights with my parents. I would say, like, I'm going to go look for my real mother.
You're brave.
Yeah.
You're brave. I guess we were always so scared. We got the wooden spoon so much.
Well, we got the belt too. Well, one time they said, well, let us help you pack. What are you going to do for dinner? Or what are you going to do for breakfast? Or where are you going to sleep? Even at 8, I realized how stupid it was to think I'm going to just go look and find her.
Did you have any siblings?
I do. I had an adopted brother who is deceased. And I have a sister who is my parents' biological child, and she was born 6 years after they adopted me.
And your brother's younger than you?
Yeah, he was 2 years younger.
Did you ever talk to him growing up about searching?
No, I never talked to him about that. I think it was because my parents had such an iron grip on the family that I think that he felt it was so blasphemous to even entertain that idea of looking for birth parents. And I called it my real parents. No, I tried to talk to him later in life about that. You know, reiterated it would be so disloyal and so unloving, and mom and dad were our parents that guilt tripping. Like, how could you even think about doing something like that?
It's so universal. I had the same thing with my adoptive sister, where she's angry that I searched, and she's never even asked me one question. Found my mom and I found my dad's side of the family. Not one question.
There are more and more things coming out. Addiction issues, anger issues.
With you, you mean?
With adoptees in general, some of it could be attributed to the whole secrecy thing, the loss of identity, but it could also be a genetic component, like the propensity to be, which ended up being true. All of paternal family had alcoholism or addiction issues. I reached this point in 2019 where I thought, I want to know if the struggles in my life had some sort of genetic component.
You're born in Virginia. How old are you when you're adopted?
3 months. I was in foster care for 3 months. The weirdest thing about this whole thing was my mother was a maternity ward supervisor. Well, first of all, it was a 50. So unmarried women, there was no freaking way they would let them keep their babies. If they kept their babies, they would be ruined, literally, you know, destitute. That's how nice Christian society was back then. But they also told these mothers that that surgical cut literally was the best thing for the baby, to have that shock at that moment. But I never believed in the primal wound or this whole separation from your mother, because I thought, how could I be affected? I don't remember that.
You had heard of and read the primal wound.
I picked it up and quite frankly, I threw it in the trash. And then I bought it again and sort of looked at it. I've read some of the things she's that some of it rubs me the wrong way. I wanted to get a second opinion, basically. I found a website with various research articles that were done in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s. They all kind of reiterated what she said. Separating a child from their family was a trauma. And even though you didn't remember it, it was stored in your implicit memory. Oh, kind of like, you know, my body remembered it. Just like when I'm going to the store, I don't really remember sometimes getting in the car or even driving to the store, but I get to the store, get my stuff, and I don't even remember driving home. But that doesn't mean that I didn't drive home.
Okay, so you go to San Francisco, you're 19, and then what? Party for a couple of decades, or and then not even think about adoption?
It was a city for exile, you know, kids who are exiled from their families. So I felt like for the first time I belonged with these other misfits. I didn't know it at the time, but a couple of my friends were adopted. They both had struggles with drugs and alcohol. But I don't think that we had enough awareness, or there wasn't enough information out there for us to say, I wonder if there's a genetic factor to this.
Or trauma.
Or trauma being separated from your mother. But I think that in my case, I believe that there was that genetic predisposition. But I also think that I used those things to survive, actually, to cope with just being alive. I was so depressed beyond clinical depression, the kind of depression where I didn't want to swallow a bunch of pills, but I didn't want to live. So I lived in this really horrible limbo of not really living and not really dying. There weren't the kind of books and materials or support groups back then that there are today. Kids today at least have a leg up on that, you know, where they can read about this stuff and go like, oh, now I get it. Now I'm not a freak.
Even if you wanted to search, it was such a commitment. Couldn't just log in and say casually, Well, let me just see what's out there.
Here's the thing. Most people are busy surviving from one day to the next. And that goes for non-adoptees and adoptees. You're trying to take care of your parents. You're trying to take care of your kids, your wife, your family. You're going to a job oftentimes that you hate, but you have to do it because it brings in the money. So this thought of going gallivanting all over the country to find your first parents is not something that I was in a position to do. I mean, I was too busy trying to survive without thinking about, and it wasn't really until I retired that I was able to go like, oh, so maybe now is a good time to think about finding answers.
You're saying in 2019 is the first time you ever searched?
Yeah, it was a DNA test. In 2006, my mother gave me my adoption papers, and the court had not stricken my name, my birth name, from the record, nor had they stricken her name. There was a document, you know, the surrender paper, where her name was left on this document. So I knew my birth name. I knew my birth mother's.
That time you're like late 40s.
Yeah, it's 2006. So I had just turned 50. And I thought, what the fuck? You had these papers my entire life, but now you think it's a good time to show me the papers of who I was and who my mother was? Well, my mother said, well, you know, we didn't think it was important.
We finally think you're old enough now. You're 50.
Yeah, I'm 50.
You can handle.
Yeah.
You're ready to retire.
I said to my mother, did you know my birth name was left on this and that my birth mother's name was left on this? She goes, no, but this is predate DNA testing.
So you got that info, this 2006, and then?
I did do a search for her, and I couldn't find anything on her. I joined this organization called ALMA. I can't remember what it stands for, but it's like a database where birth mothers and adoptees can enter their information and say, I'm looking for so-and-so, which I did, to no avail. When the DNA testing came along around 2012, it still wasn't perfected and I still wasn't ready. But in 2019, I had read Danny Shapiro's book, Inheritance, where she takes a DNA test for fun and discovers that her father wasn't biologically related to her. She was, you know, what they call an MPE, and it told the story of her trying to find, she was donor conceived, and she was off on this DNA detective story to find answers. That was the summer of 2019. I finished it in June, and in July, I sent away for an ancestry DNA kit, came back with a first cousin match, which meant that she was directly related to my one or the other birth parents. And it was shocking to see that. It took a while to sink in because I didn't have cousins growing up, and I had a whole bunch of second cousin matches, which meant we shared great grandparents and second and third and fourth cousins, but which is far back, but it was the first cousin. And so I contacted her. You know, I was really afraid to say I was an adoptee because I thought either she would go like, oh, I don't want to touch this, or they would respond out of curiosity, which she did. So we started sending pictures back and forth of various family members.
Was she on the West Coast?
No, she was in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, where my father lived. Oh, and I had three half-sisters. So she sent pictures of my half-sisters, all identical. Well, at an early age, two of my sisters resembled their mother, and the third sister and I resembled each other.
How was that when you first see your mom's name? And then had she named you? Was there a name for you on there?
She named me David, as did my parents.
But how was it when you saw your mom's name? To finally see her last name, her first name.
It was weird.
But that sums up our life.
Yeah, weird. It was just weird. I mean, it was just like, sometimes you don't know how to respond. You just go. I was stunned that I found this information that I really hadn't given a great deal of thought to my middle years when I was middle-aged. I think I stopped thinking about it like in my 20s. So here it is. You know, I have this information and then I take this DNA test. This is really crazy. I thought I would not be affected by it. I just thought like, oh, this would be interesting. I'll just go on this DNA excavation. I'll see pictures of people. I thought to myself, hopefully they'll be deceased because I didn't want to have a face-to-face meeting because I was, you know, again, the rejection came in the play. I just thought like, oh.
Was it also like, okay, I have a good enough career now, I can...
I was pretty established with the university at that time, and I felt it was kind of a good period of my life. So I didn't have that sense of emptiness that I did earlier in life. I almost felt like I was a character in somebody else's book. Like, this isn't really happening to me, and somebody else's story. And I'm like this observer standing off in the sidelines watching this thing about somebody else's life, because it was so surreal and weird. So now I have this information, but I wasn't really sure. Okay, so I have this information. What am I going to do? How am I going to find out more? And when DNA testing came along, that broke the cold case. That finally enabled me to see both sides of my family, of which I really have nothing in common with. I was raised in California. They're in Virginia. They're very conservative. They're very rigid. They've never traveled outside of Virginia.
Who is the half-sister?
Well, I first connected with my cousin, my father's niece. So one of my uncles, who is also deceased. It was her father, and her father and my father were brothers. And I looked like her and her two brothers. So my two cousins, we bore very similar characteristics. I think that they must have resembled their father. I resembled him. I mean, when I look at pictures of me when I'm young and pictures of him, we're very similar in our appearances.
So when you found, this is 4 years ago, so both parents were deceased, or was anyone around?
Yeah, they were both deceased.
How is it to see photos of your dad and of your mom?
It was emotional, and yet I couldn't be emotional. I wanted to cry, but I couldn't. I felt numb. I felt like a relief, but I also felt numb. I actually did go through a period of, I don't know if I would call it mourning, but I felt very sad about what happened and the circumstances that led me to being placed. Hearing my sisters talk about their father and what it was like in their household, it mirrored our family. My dad was alcoholic. My birth father was alcoholic. They both had anger issues. There was a lot of fighting in the house. And I thought, well, things wouldn't have necessarily been better. I mean, people say it's not better and it would have been different. I think that once you come face to face with this fantasy of who your parents were and what they were like, and then finding the truth about who they were and what they were like, you realize that they were human and flawed. I felt sad because I felt like a lot of my years of feeling lost and partying and kind of mirrored how my father had lived his life. I think the loneliest thing was finding out that both of them died in a hospital room with no family around.
Because they had alienated them.
Yeah. Well, my father, when he got divorced from my half-sister, his wife died shortly thereafter. And then the daughters, I don't know, they weren't at the hospital. I mean, he didn't alienate them, but I think that, I don't know. And I don't know what happened to my mother. I think basically she had outlived most of her family too. She was 90 when she died. My dad was only 75, and he had diabetes. He had heart problems, which I didn't inherit, thank God.
How many years did you miss them by?
I missed him by 13 years. And I miss her by 7 years. Oh, I do have a first cousin, actually a half first cousin. She and I share a grandmother on my mother's side. She actually remembered my mother, and she told me stories about my mother, which helped bring her back to life for me, hearing descriptions of what she was like and what she talked like.
Do you meet any of these people?
You know, we had this reunion for my aunt's 92nd birthday, and they were all fucked up. They were all, I mean, the women weren't. But the men were.
Welcome to the family.
Yeah, but the men were. The men were totally drunk. And the women were fine. I mean, it was very upstanding, upper middle class weirdness.
This is your dad's side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
They had a reunion just because of you?
It was supposed to meet for them, the family to meet me, but it was also for my aunt's birthday. I show up at this thing, and really nobody asked me anything about myself or what I did or what my life was like. Few people did. Largely, they were really uninterested.
It is weird.
Yeah, except for my aunt. My aunt was wanting to meet me because I was her brother's son. So, of course, she wanted to meet me and see who I was. But the rest of the family, they really didn't give a shit whether I was there or not. I mean, it was weird. Two of my sisters are twins. Both of them have mental health issues. and they would fight over me. One sister wanted me to stay with her and the other sister wanted to stay with her. And they both talked shit about each other. Then they tried to pull me into their dysfunctional relationship. Oh my God, that just mirrored my own relationship with my adoptive family. I mean, it was like this sibling insanity. And I got home from that reunion, it was in 2020, and I was like so goddamn depressed. The funny part was I got onto my Facebook page. I said a lot of my male cousin acted like drunken hillbillies. When the women cousin saw it, she called me up and she lambasted me. I mean, she screamed at me on the phone. You betrayed us. You, how dare you say that they were drunk in hell? Well, they were. They spent the whole time at this reunion for this aunt looking for booze. And when they drank, they that kind of mush mouth, too much alcohol and Southern decadence. And they thought Californians were weird.
Thank you, Dave. That reminds me, I have to visit San Francisco. How has that never happened? I have been to Stuttgart 6 times, however, and Dave's great-great-grandfather is from there. I don't think it compares with San Francisco, but it is something. To my Midwestern soul, Stuttgart is nonetheless very exotic. Thanks for listening to Secret Son, wherever you listen. Please give us a star rating, write a review, tell a friend, go over to Patreon, do whatever you want to do there. Every little pfennig helps. See you next time.